from the land of the free and the home of the Chiefs, with two-man coverage of the red and gold. This is the Locked On Chiefs Podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
And welcome back to another episode of Locked On Chiefs. This is your episode for Thursday, March 1st. Welcome to a new month. We're going to have a lot of draft coverage coming up over the next couple of weeks. And Ryan is going to be back and covering that more in depth as we go along. For now, there is not much news in Chiefs Kingdom, but the one thing that there was Andy Reid talking at the media to the media today, talking about how Clark Hunt does not meddle. He lets his coaches and his front office staff do their jobs. He doesn't tell them what to do. So this move from the coach is basically saying Clark Hunt had nothing to do with the decision to trade Marcus Peters. He couldn't really get into the depth of the trade because the trade is not consummated yet. It will not be consummated for another couple of weeks. Hopefully there's going to be much more coming out about this situation so people have an idea as to why they felt like they had to make this move. But at this time, that is going to be as much as you're going to get from Andy Reid. And Brett Veach is going to talk on Thursday, so by the time you're listening to this, maybe he will have already talked. I would imagine, going to say the same thing, that Clark Hunt had nothing to do with the trade. It was a decision on Reid and Veach's part. Yes, they did talk to Clark Hunt about it, but it wasn't something that he pushed. That is really what's going on. That is the Chiefs news as it sits right now. This trade has got a lot of people up in arms. I get that. It's going to be very hard to sit back and watch Marcus Peters play for another team. He's a very talented player. It's going to be very hard for Kansas City to replace him, and it doesn't seem like they got value for the trade. I completely get all of those thoughts. I do, however, think that this is something they're going to be able to move on from, and I think that they will be fine in the process. It's just going to take some time for fans to get past it and for the team to get past it in all likelihood. So, without further ado, we are going to bring on Seth Kaiser. We are going to be talking about this trade. And most importantly, I do want to mention that we did record this before we actually knew the compensation. So going into this interview, we do not know the compensation that Kansas City got from Los Angeles. So that might have changed a couple of things that were said. But just a heads up, that's what's going on. And like I said, we do not have the compensation. Without further ado, here's Seth.
And Seth's back with us from Arrowhead Pride. There's a lot to talk about with this Marcus Peters trade. And we're going to start with, initial reactions. Seth, me and Chris have talked about it all week. How are you feeling?
My thing was very much a holy crap kind of moment. It was interesting. The more people were saying stuff, the more I was like, this doesn't make sense. Why is this continuing to be a thing? And then, Chris texted me, I believe. And then a few other people messaged me and I was like, wait, what? And of course, I was stuck in court all day that day. And so I just I pumped out a really quick article saying there's only, a couple different possibilities here. It just blew my mind. And I was just stunned. Absolute disbelief.
I'm glad I'm not alone. After railing all last week that this shouldn't happen, this couldn't happen, there's no way to get trade value for it. Well, evidently it's happening.
Right.
Well, but obviously, obviously it's not just about his play. So,
yeah.
If you don't trade him if it's about his play, because he's one of the best corners in the league.
Yeah. And I think that remains to be true. It's a whole person, right?
Right. And I think, last week when we chatted and when we all talked about Marcus Peters' value and the value of turnovers, the reality of it is we kept one caveat that remained there. Because I remember this was the night that we chatted for 40 minutes and then the audio didn't work. And then we went the next day, if I recall. Right. Yeah, it was just a disaster. It was a rough week. I hit a deer with my van. It was just crazy week. And so... Oh, yeah, I'm fine. Deer's not okay, but whatever.
That's the right outcome. I'll take it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. My van will be okay. Anyway, so the caveat that we all kept in mind was, unless there's something weird going on behind the scenes, this is crazy. And that's what we kept saying, right? Unless there's more going on here. Well, it turns out there must have been.
Yeah.
Because he's not going to be a Chief.
And he's already come out on both Instagram and Facebook and said his goodbye to Kansas City. So, I mean, he knows it's official as well.
It was a pretty lukewarm goodbye, but
yeah.
You know, he was only a Chief for 3 years, honestly. You know, it's not like this life altering thing like it was for Derek Johnson, who was there for, you know, 13 right. years. But yeah, it was just interesting. You know, he called it the business of football. And that can mean a whole lot of things if you want to read into it.
Yeah. I think, honestly, the bigger picture for me is losing all these players that have been relied upon for the last couple of seasons, all in the same offseason.
Yeah, it's going to be a completely different looking team this next year.
Does it change your opinion that there is nobody that's untouchable on this team?
Absolutely. There's no one that would surprise me outside of Mahomes, maybe Kareem Hunt, and maybe Tyreek Hill.
Kelsey wouldn't surprise you?
Kelsey wouldn't surprise me. Houston wouldn't surprise me. Chris Jones wouldn't surprise me. No one would surprise me outside of Mahomes and maybe Hunt and Hill. It just, again, you got a guy, an all-pro corner on a rookie contract.
Yeah.
It's one of the most valuable assets in the league. And from the sounds of it, and we don't know, obviously, and I don't think we're going to know until March 14th, which drives me insane. you know, I don't think they got, you know, I think they had to sell kind of low. And that tells me, I mean, when they make a decision, boom, it's on. When they decide a guy's not part of the long-term plan, that's it. And so no one would surprise me.
Well, and I have to applaud that, though, because we've heard like all kinds of different takes on what led up to this. I know you had some information.
Yes.
We heard some information, a different story, all kinds of these things culminating in the fact that whether or not it was through one aspect or another, requesting a trade or simply wanting, you know, not to resign and letting them know that or turning down some gigantic offer that's rumored to have been made. Bottom line is it was clear Marcus Peters didn't want to be here beyond this first contract. So why not get as much value as you can for him right now?
Right. And I get that to an extent. For me, I think it's a combination issue. I think if he just had maybe – because what I kept hearing more and more, the more people I talked to, was that he had a really contentious relationship with the coaches. And that's a problem.
Sounds familiar.
Yeah. Right. And that's – now, look, and it sounds familiar. And look, you know, whether this is fair or not, when you got completely kicked off your college team for reportedly similar issues, it's tough to – you know, my dad used to always say something to me, you know, what's the common denominator? You know what I mean? Like when I would talk about, you know, this friend is whatever, that friend's whatever. My dad's like, yeah, son, well, what's the common denominator there? And like always, that guy has never gotten tired of being right. And it's generally, if you have, because both Washington and Kansas City have every reason to make it work with Marcus Peters, right? I mean, he's incredibly talented and he helps you win football games. You've got every reason to hang on to him. But yet two different coaching staffs with every reason to hang on to him have said, no, thank you. And then, and I'm sorry, some people are ignoring this because there are some really upset people out there right now. Like a couple guys that I appear with on 610 from time to time. I mean, they are like, they're from the sounds of it, they are like convinced that this is like a all about the anthem, all about protesting, all about color, right?
Right.
And,
oh, wow.
And I mean, I'm oversimplifying it, but they were pretty emotional about the whole thing. And there was a guy from the Kansas City Star basically saying the only reason Marcus Peters is gone, it was race issues. But I just got to say, when you've got two different coaching staffs that were inclined to make it work and then said no thank you, and then 29 teams in the NFL, 30 if you include the Chiefs, are saying no thank you.
Especially, I just have to say this. Especially the guys that drafted him in Ballard and John Dorsey. Those guys right. were not interested. That is a huge Wait. Red flag to me.
Right, and John Dorsey has tons of draft capital. And what are the odds of him picking with any of his picks, even that, you know, number four overall, that number one overall? What are the chances of him picking someone as good as Marcus Peters? They're not great.
Well, and he's also got tons of money. And that's the other side of it, is that he's got the money to eventually pay him if he has to.
Absolutely. And so this would have been a way for John Dorsey, if you look at it from a pragmatic standpoint, to still have tons of draft capital, but now have an all-pro corner on a rookie deal. Talk about starting to turn things around in a hurry, right?
Yep.
I mean, this seems like a dream scenario for John Dorsey, and he said no thank you. What does John Dorsey know? And I had a few people saying, well, no, it doesn't make sense for John Dorsey because they're rebuilding. And it's like, can you imagine being the GM who's able to turn around? Cause, and don't forget, when they were rebuilding the Chiefs, what is one of the things they did? They went out and got veterans so they could have immediate success as well as start turning things around long term. Marcus Peters is a no-brainer if you're John Dorsey, unless there's something else going on there that he knows that we don't. Right? I mean, that's and same with Ballard. Now, with Ballard, it's a little different. They don't have as much capital, and they aren't maybe in a position to turn it around quite as quickly, although they are if Andrew Luck comes back healthy, right?
Right.
And so, I mean, there's every reason. They just lost Vontae Davis. There's every reason to grab him there too. And Ballard, who has a different style than Dorsey, he wasn't interested either.
Well, and so Ballard, it says something. That brought up that was also reportedly the guy that went and got Marcus Peters to begin with. He's the one that went out there, I believe, and talked to him before the draft.
And I remember that as well. Yeah, that was one of Ballard's. And so it's an interesting situation. And again, I want to be really careful because I don't want to come across, oh, this is all Marcus Peters' fault, blah, blah, blah. Because I think it's on a coaching staff to try to make it work with a player, right? Especially talented players. And so I do think
– doesn't it go too far?
I think that blaming just one side here is very myopic, in my opinion. I think that there's always more going on there, and I do think that it is on the coaches primarily to make those relationships work. Now, again, I don't know how far it gets, but I can't bring myself to just blame Marcus Peters for this. I just can't.
Well, and I'm not blaming Marcus Peters by himself for this. All I'm saying is that at some point, it's too far. You can't just give him an open-ended, you can do whatever you want.
Sure. And I think it's interesting because it's hard to – because he got suspended last season, which I remember someone pointed out to me that Andy Reid has only suspended a player for disciplinary reasons one time in his career besides Marcus Peters.
Yep.
Just one time. And now imagine what that means. I mean, we're talking, how long has Reed been coaching now? Like almost 20 years?
Yeah.
Well, and look at who the two players are and what are their similarities.
Yep. Yeah. And so then when you want to talk about, because it's not like Andy Reid hasn't had guys who were outspoken politically on past teams. The guy who got suspended was Terrell Owens, and that was because of issues with his coaches. I think Andy Reid, people talk about him like as a player's coach, and I think he is, but I also think he is a very I'm in charge guy too.
Yep.
You don't get to be as successful as he is without being that way.
And it also raises a red flag to me that Andy Reid has had how many different players around him in his 20-year career, and he's been successful with almost all of them and he was successful with T.O. for a time.
Right, and with Peters for a time.
Right. But he just couldn't make it work. I mean, to me, that says a lot.
But it does.
Let's.
How do they move on?
Yeah, let's jump to what the future of this franchise is, because the guy, not the fastest corner, was never his strength, but a ball hawk. They need production in turnovers going forward. Hopefully, they can get somebody faster to play out there. The acquisitions that they made to this point don't necessarily, in my opinion, point towards replacing Peters. They still look like it's an adjunct to help him. So now, do you think that this might signal a change in the defensive philosophy in terms of not playing as much man and playing more zone?
I think part of that depends on their opinion of Kendall Fuller. I had someone reach out and mention that that the team loves Kendall Fuller. Like, they like think as highly of him as I do. And I was gushing over that guy. So, I mean, if they think he's a guy who can play lockdown man coverage, fair enough. But, yeah, I mean, you know, Amerson's more of an off-man or zone guy. And so it'll be interesting to see the direction they go. I'm assuming, I really am, unless they make one other big move, that they're planning on Fuller being a full-time guy, not just a 70% guy. And so I'm guessing he maybe has like that Chris Harris Jr. role where he starts off on the outside and then slides into the slot. Although Steven Nelson is significantly better in the slot than he is on the boundary. So It could well be that they're signing Fuller to be their guy. You know what I mean? And he's the Peters replacement. Amerson's the number two guy and Nelson's your slot guy. Here's the thing. That has potential to be a good corner group, but there's a lot of ifs there, right? If Amerson plays as well as he played in 2015, and if Steven Nelson plays as well as he played in 2016, and if Kendall Fuller plays as well as he did for Washington, then it's a really good group, right? That's a lot of ifs.
It is. But as we talked about, I mean, this is obviously not about the production. It's about replacing the player himself. So if we move past that, moving into this cornerback class for draft, because I think that they're going to be looking in the draft, you know, and maybe even in free agency, I think that they can make this cornerback group better than it was in the past year. But they still have some moves to make.
I would concur with that. You know, I mean, they definitely still have some moves to make. It just depends on what the team's opinion of Steven Nelson is, in my opinion. And I like Nelson. I'm just not sure how comfortable I am with him as like the third guy. You know what I mean? He came back and he played pretty well down the stretch for the Chiefs once he got those first few games behind him. You know, if you look at, you know, some of the, like, you know, PFF isn't gospel, but if you look at what they thought of him, he was one of the few guys who played well in the playoff game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Cole Beasley thing was obviously a struggle just coming back from the injury, and Beasley's the kind of guy that eats up nickel corners. So,
right.
I think too many people put emphasis on that. I think he was still probably not 100%, and maybe you're going to see him play better in 2018.
Well, yeah, I think so. He's in a contract year as well.
Yep. So, and that's one good thing. You know, him and Amerson are both on contract years. That's a good thing.
Yeah.
Well, and you could also make an argument that Fuller will be kind of as well. I mean, he's got two more years, but he can re-sign after this next year. So you got three corners because you're going to have a lot to prove.
Absolutely. I think they're maybe planning on building the defense around Fuller, like at least the corner group. I tell you, and I know, Ryan, I know you and me have occasionally been, you're a little less sure on him than I am. But I mean, his film, I can't find a thing to pick at in his film. He's good at everything. It's ridiculous. He's like one of those guys, you know, that like is just good at everything and it's almost annoying. You know, well,
The nice thing about a guy like that though is not only is he good at everything, but from everything we've heard, he is a film rat. And if he is really that type of guy, that's going to be a great person to have in that locker room with all the young players they're going to have.
Absolutely. And, you know, at this point, one thing that I like is this is going to be Steven Nelson's fourth year. He's not a young player anymore. And he seems like a guy who's willing to put in the work. He seems like he's an aggressive player. He's a tough player. And so I like – Steven Nelson's a guy I think you like having on your team. I really do. Mm-hmm. I'm just not sure if you want him as the guy for the third corner. Now, again, the one year that he mostly did it in the slot, he played really well. And so you can see that's the funny thing. There's so much variance there, and I think that's what's bothering me. When it's Peters, Fuller, Amerson, Nelson, you're like, that's going to be a good group, right? But you remove Peters, and it's like, okay, Fuller, Amerson, Nelson, it could be a good group for sure. I think Fuller will be great. It could be a fantastic group. Right? If they all play their best football. But, well, I mean, it's just a little too iffy for me.
I will tell you this. I will never forget the first year that Nelson was drafted. He did not play much. But I will never forget watching him at training camp. And after running his butt off at training camp, staying out there and continuing to work on drills afterwards.
That's cool. Those are
you know, those type of guys, they're going to continue to do well, and they're going to be working on things that are going to make them better players. And I am not sold that he was 100% last year at any point during the season after coming back from the surgery he had.
Right. Right. And so the fan base is a little lower on Nelson than they were last year, interestingly enough, right? Because it's all about what you've done for me lately. Because after 2016, everyone was feeling pretty good about Nelson. But the problem was, especially as a slot corner. But yeah, he struggled against Beasley. Then everyone, it turns out he's not good. Well, down the stretch, I'd argue Steven Nelson played pretty well. And in fact, Steven Nelson, in my opinion, is one of the reasons why the Chiefs played so well the one game Peters missed last season.
Well, and I thought he gives him a spark. I thought I saw the intensity rise when he came back.
I completely agree. Maybe not quite as much in the Cowboys game. But again, you've got a guy who's really, I don't know if he was back all the way, but you saw it, you know, really come out against the Raiders. And as things move forward, I thought you saw a rise in intensity. There is something to be said. And I always thought the tackling issues with Peters were way overwrought because you don't need him to be a great tackler, but there is something to be said for a guy who comes in and will lay a hit and does what Nelson does. He plays physical. He plays aggressively. He can test the ball well. Now, again, I don't think he's a great corner, but I think he's a very competent slot corner. And so the question is, what does Amerson do? You know what I mean? There's a little too much variance here, but I do think they could still be overall significantly improved on defense this next year. And I think that's one thing about trading Peters. I think it's going to really lower everyone's expectations for the defense. And the thing is, the defense was bad last year with Peters. And so if you can just come out there and have an average defense after other moves that they make, the wrath of the fans, I think, will be considerably cooled by that.
Well, and there's always one way to protect a secondary that's weak or new, and that's provide more pass rush and get to the passer.
Get after
that.
Yep. Well, that's why I'm just so relieved that the compensation is Aaron Donald. That's going to really help.
Yeah.
I bet you I've had at least 100 people either tweet or DM me asking if I think it could be Donald. And I'm just here to say, no. No, it's not. They could be trading, and I really believe this. I think Veach could have, in the middle of negotiations, been like, well, what about if we throw you our first next year? Then how about you just give us Donald? And I think the Rams would have still said no.
Yeah.
He's an untradeable asset.
He's the best player. He's the best defender in the league, right?
Yep. He's arguably the best player in the league. Aaron Donald is a freak. But there's like him and...
I don't disagree with that, but here's my issue with what you're saying. Why not pay him then? That's the one thing that hasn't made sense to me with them, is you would think that you would want your best player in the league, the best player in the league, to be happy. And all they have to do is pay him.
Well,
and the longer
they wait,
the more they're going to pay.
I'm thinking he's probably asking for quarterback money. And he's like one defender in the league that might be worth it. Because here's what we're discovering with like Von Miller and Justin Houston. Because we saw this with Von Miller last year with Denver. That's kind of been a quietly... It's interesting. The fan base in Denver hasn't turned on Von Miller the way the fan base in Kansas City, some of them have on Justin Houston. You notice that? You know, Von Miller had 10 sacks last year. 0.5 more than Houston in an extra game. And what you see... I just don't know if an edge rusher, even a guy as great as Houston or Von Miller, is worth quarterback money. And that's the problem, is that's what they were getting, right? The thing is, Aaron Donald might be the one defender in the league that is worth quarterback money. He is so good. He is freakishly good. He is J.J. Watt a couple years ago, he's the same level and arguably more disruptive as a pass rusher.
Yeah, I mean... And we got to remember, he's the same draft class as Dee Ford.
Right.
He's playing on his fifth year option in 2018. They haven't had to pay him yet.
Right.
They're gonna.
Yeah.
But
yes.
if they had any qualms, I still don't think they'd walk away from him.
Oh, I don't think so either. And I'm sorry that I sidetracked us for 2 minutes talking about a player that'll never be in Kansas City. I'm telling you, had I been on the phone, and this is why I could never be a GM, right? Because I would either be fantastic at it, or I would crash and burn so hard. Probably the latter. Because I'd be the guy that'd be like, I need this guy. And then I would give up whatever it took to get him. And that is no way to live. That doesn't work. No. Well, you saw what happened with that when Washington decided they really needed Alex Smith. You know what I mean? They were willing to give away a pick and a great young corner. So I think the compensation is going to be a few draft picks, and I'm just really hoping they didn't get too – it wasn't too rough. But I'm really excited to review the film from that second Raiders game, though, to see what they did. Yeah.
I'm just curious. Do you think that the Washington, Alex Smith, Kendall Fuller trade – coincided with this Peters trade, or you think they're completely different?
I think they were two completely separate events, but it's pretty clear now that, you know, Florio and the guys that I was mocking were right, that Veach was doing this in preparation to trade Marcus Peters. Like, he knew he was going to do that, and so he clearly said, okay, we need to get ahead of the game with regards to corner. Because they were already really weak there last year. And they knew they were giving away by far their best player. And so that's why he went into – I think he went into that with the Redskins in part because they had a corner who could help. Like, significantly help. I think he was like, okay, how do I get a guy who I think can be a lockdown corner? You know? And then Amerson, you need depth. You need it because even with Fuller, if you're getting rid of Peters, you need another guy that you're comfortable being out there. So one thing that's comforting to me in all of this is Veach, even if I don't like the move, he clearly went into the offseason with an overall plan here.
I think that's true. And I think that he's acquired players that feed into what they may have to do. And before we wrap up, I know you're looking at what they did when they didn't have Peters last season.
Right.
How did they look? What worked for them? And how do Amerson and Fuller in particular fit into replicating that scheme?
I have no idea yet, but I do know that I'm going to find out. I just, you know, I haven't watched the film, but it is interesting. And look, each individual game in the NFL is different, right? Different things happen. It can be weird. But just keep in mind, in the first game against the Raiders in which Marcus Peters played, Derek Carr threw for 400-plus yards and 3 touchdowns with no picks. The second game where Peters did not play, he completed barely 50% of his passes for a shade over 200 yards, had 1 touchdown and 2 picks. And so here's the one thing I'd say as far as hope goes. The idea that it is a guarantee the defense will be bad with Marcus Peters gone is not, it's just not true. It's not a guarantee. Now, it makes the hill steeper, but they've shown they can perform at least one game without him. And so I'm going to be taking a look at that film and figure out, okay, what did they do? And I'm not going to necessarily look for, like, compare and contrast. I'm just going to look at what they did. Why were they successful that game? And what were they doing that game? Because that might tell us something. Because we know what they did with Peters. They consistently had Peters play, you know, left cornerback. He consistently played off man like 80% of the time and jumped routes. That's what Peters did. So what were they doing without him? Because I think that might be at least a little bit of a peek into how life looks this next season. Although with Eric Berry returning, you know, so much of Sutton's defense revolves around him that it might not help at all. But hey, it's what I do, right?
I'm looking forward to it either way.
They need to find another. They need to find another safety, regardless, though.
Oh well, haven't you heard the compensation is Joyner? So
nice.
Who's not under contract?
Yeah, exactly. That's what makes it so sneaky.
Gotcha.
Oh, we'll have so much more on this as we go along, folks. Seth, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me, guys.
That's it for us, and we'll be back next week on a more regular schedule with regular time, and we'll go on for hours with Seth rather than trying to keep it tight today. So, we appreciate your patience, and we appreciate Seth for coming on, and we'll talk to y'all tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to the Locked On Chiefs podcast. While you're out there, give us a rating or review and reach out to us on Twitter @RyanTracyNFL and @ChrisClarkNFL. We'll talk to you next time.